You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to Life on the Other Side of Should, a podcast of the She Hive Women's Collective in Ferndale, Michigan. I'm your host, Ursula Adams.
And I'm your other host, Sonia Mastic.
And I'm your other side host, Jackie Smith.
And each week we gather to debunk the pretty bullshit women have been taught to believe about themselves.
And explore how women can thrive when they live life according to their own truth, or maybe rules.
So, welcome back. So here we are, season one, episode two. I've always wanted to say something like that.
You feel so cool now?
I do. I feel very, very cool. How about you two?
Super cool because I have headphones on and a giant microphone.
Yeah.
That's real.
as opposed to the hairbrush?
Yeah.
Pretty much. So, what's on your minds? What's going on these days, ladies?
Wow.
It's so much. That's what's going on in my mind. Too much. It is. I equate it.
Jackie,
to
when is there ever not too much going on?
So your hair's dyed red for a reason. There's so much
Tuesday,
so much fire there.
Tuesday the 25th of February 19.
That one time.
Yeah, you learn and do more and research more and read more and just learn more than anybody I know.
Oh my God, I needed to hear that because I thought I was slacking.
And then you and I are just puddles of mud.
I'm just going to go home now and just do something simple.
You're always reading some interesting book. You have a new something. I love it, which I believe is a must for good leaders to always be learning. So I love
and
that.
And good humans.
Yeah.
Cool. Oh, it's been a, So what's going on with Sonia?
Sonia, what's on your mind?
Well, we did talk a little bit about it in the last podcast, but I am really, for me, when things become recurring themes, because I'm really hard-headed.
Yeah.
And so things have to be like beat over the head a few times to me. And so it's really interesting. In the last podcast, we addressed anger a little bit. But the thing that's pressed upon me is vulnerability, and the idea that should, it does, it sort of forces vulnerability. And so, I don't know, it's been, I'm trying to figure this, I'm trying to sift it, you know, sift it out a little bit and try to figure out what that means for me. And sort of all ways, like in business and friendships and relationships, like what real vulnerability looks like. Yeah.
Brené Brown talks about the concept of trying to hotwire connection.
I think it's probably part of it because I just finished Into the Wilderness.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm reading that right now.
Oh, jeez. It's so good.
Yeah.
You know what? I only remember one part of that, and it is in the last couple of pages when she talked about compassion and laid it out. And I'm like, this is the reason why I read this book right here. I don't know what else she said, but this right here.
I love,
If you don't have self-compassion, you cannot have compassion for others. Yeah. It's not possible.
Well, but what she's teaching a lot in the book is what you're already – you're both already so great at and are, for me, great mentors for this, is that you guys are, it's the whole idea of there's just going to be times when you're on your own in the wilderness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're going to stand by your convictions, your beliefs, and you're going to be a big girl and you're going to just deal with that. And it's a great lesson that I'm learning, and it's good. I'm glad that you guys are reading it, but you guys live it pretty well. So,
So that actually begs the question, before we get pull a should out of the should box. I'm going to giggle in my head every time I say that. I can't help it.
All right. We can do it together because I go, you said should.
I'm a 12-year-old in my head constantly.
It's a box.
Poo and box, all the same.
Exactly. Ooh, ow.
Well, I think that's an infection in the making.
Totally what I was thinking, right?
A lot of this goes so sideways.
Actually, at the She Hive, we have a group. It's called the Badass Ladies Supper Club. They me included, or whoever shows up that particular month. They work on bucket list items together. And I remember it's one of the very first events we ever had at the She Hive. We continue to do it to this day. But the acronym is BALLSACK. I'm sorry that I said that while you took a drink of water there, Jackie.
I'm not.
Almost.
Yeah. So it makes me laugh every single time.
BALLSACK.
So, but.
That's why I've never gone.
I'm not going to BALLSACK.
How dare you invite me to the BALLSACK, you egregious creature.
I'm totally saying that to my husband tonight, by the way.
That's right.
Next thing you know, you're going to call yourself a teabagger.
Okay, this is really going south. No,
I'm done.
You're never done.
Oh, no. So when's the time that you've actually stood in the wilderness, like stood in your own conviction, nobody else was there with you?
I have a really specific moment.
Yeah.
It's the moment that I realized I can count on myself. So my daughter is about a week and a half old, and my sister has been out with the flu. I had a really crazy business partner where I gave her a piece of my business because one of her best friends, who was my lawyer that I had on weekly retainer, because they convinced me to do this, I was... This all happened during a pregnancy. Pregnancy brain, man. Yeah. You're just stupid.
You're like, whatever you say.
Okay. Okay, because I'm in a panic.
I only have 70% of my brain power right now. Right. Let's do it.
And they were trying to take over my company.
No way.
Wow.
I had just given birth like 10 days earlier, and they're calling a board meeting. Oh, my God. We had weekly board meetings. It was the most insane time in my life. And they told me, they called and said, we're going to have a board meeting. And I know you just had a baby, but we have some decisions to make. And I go, you can't. It's my company. Because the lawyer had convinced me that if I didn't give part of my company to someone who wasn't related to me, that I could, somebody could pierce the corporate veil and take my company away from me. And like, who are they? I don't know. Who would want it? It's just a little candle company. Yeah. We're messy.
Yeah.
And we smell.
Good, so, really. You smell really good.
Thanks. So I called a friend of mine. I'm crying. And she goes, hang on. And she put her husband on a phone on the phone, who's a lawyer. And he goes, I can't allow this to happen. So he and his other partner did a quick search to make sure there's no conflict of interest. Did not understand who these guys are, but they're the two lead lawyers for Dyke & McGossett. Showed up, which is a huge law firm, top-tier law firm in Detroit. And they show up at my board meeting with their lawyery selves. And they said, okay, so we're going to make sure everything that happened here is happens here is legal and non, and you won't intimidate her. I didn't have a chance to talk to my sister. I had these people trying to take away my company, which is the stupidest thing I think of. I owned 73%. This is dumb.
Yeah.
They can't unless I say, okay.
Yeah.
And I stood up with my 10-day-old baby in my hands and rocking her, getting all mama bear. And I say, you're all fired. And nice. I didn't know if my sister was going to back me up. I didn't fire her.
Yeah.
She's still with me. She's my buddy. I said, this company no longer has room for you. This is dumb. You have to leave, pack up your stuff now and go. And it was the most scariest moment. I was still bleeding.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just crazy how out of control my life was. So it was, that was the, one of those defining moments of I'm in the wilderness all by myself with a 10-day-old baby.
Yeah.
And vulnerability and
That was some badass shit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
Yeah. What about you, Ursula?
I think there was a time I filed a sexual harassment suit, and this particular person had, I wasn't the only person, let's just say, you know, and it was called sexual harassment, but it was even more hostile workplace. I mean, it was just really bad. And I had been told, you know, pretty distinctly by my lawyer and others that, because I also wasn't the first to file, and that if I could get others to sign on. Mm-hmm. That it would be beneficial to my whatever. And so I did. I called people that I had talked to that I knew what was going on, and every single one of them. And by the way, this is the time my husband was laid off from work. So I was primary breadwinner, only breadwinner. I was carrying our benefits, all of that. Mm-hmm. We just had moved into a new house in Detroit. And one by one, when I called them, they're like, we support you. We're behind you 100%, but I'm not putting my name on that. I'm not putting my name on that. I can't afford to. And I'm thinking, like, if anybody couldn't afford to at that point in time, it was me. Mm-hmm. You know, I was the only. And but I knew it was the right thing to do. And I did. And they told me the day that I made the claim that more than likely I would lose my job. And I knew it was to be true because everybody else who had done it had lost their job too. Mm-hmm. And I was scared shitless, but I knew it was the right thing to do, and I did it. And mm-hmm. I was scared. And actually, it took 30 days to – no, probably 30 to 60 days to go through the whole investigation. And every single day I went in there for 60 days almost worried that I was going to lose my job. And everybody stopped talking. Yeah. And everybody stopped talking to me because all of a sudden I was really damaged goods, even though they all. And then the minute that I wouldn't say I won because he resigned, but, and with a lot of money, I'm sure. But when he resigned, then they came back out of the woodwork. They're like, oh, yeah, look what we did. And I'm like, fuck all of you.
Yeah.
And then they couldn't understand why I was mad at him. And I was mad. That's where I stood in my next wilderness by myself, just being mad at him for a while.
Yeah. Wow.
But yeah, that was it was a really stressful time. What about you, Sonia?
It's interesting. Mine aren't nearly as dramatic as the stories, but
I stood in the wilderness. I ran out of orange juice. And I cried.
Don't you like it's so womanly?
Yeah. No one agreed with me.
My martyrdom's greater than yours.
Yeah, that's right.
But I definitely have an extensive experience with that, being a female drummer.
Yeah.
So being a female musician is one thing, but being a female drummer, how dare you break the ranks and play a man's instrument?
So pretty much every day you stood in the wilderness and just, you know, it became par for course.
Yeah.
So there's a story that I love to tell. For a while I played with Barrett Strong from Motown. So he wrote with Holland and Dozer, a ton of number one hits for Motown. And they wrote things for the Beatles and the Stones and the Supremes and Marvin Gaye. And so he kept his studio for a while in Southfield, the same with the way they did Motown. So he would have a house band in there and singer songwriters would come in.
Yeah.
So, I would come in and sit on a session from time to time. And for a few years, I did a lot of sessions there, and, it was all, older men of color, generally who were racist and sexist. Mm. Sometimes one or the other, sometimes both. It was always a hostile environment.
Yeah.
And so my husband is a bass player. And so one day they were short a bass player. And so the producer called and said, hey, do you know anyone? And he happened to be off work. So I was like, oh, I'll bring my husband in. And he was intimidated. Like, he loves to play live and doesn't really love recording that much. I love to record and I don't really love playing live that much anymore. But so I took a lot of corralling. I talked him in and we walk in and they're introducing me to these, you know, they're all like very like, you know, this guy wrote Sissy Strut and Mustang Sally and, you know, like they're all very influential writers and stuff. But generally speaking, the really old guys were very, very sexist.
Yeah.
And you had to, I just daily had to handle it with grace, you know, meaning like I just had to stick up for myself. So I won't say who it is because I don't want to throw the guy under the bus, but.
It was Kid Rock, wasn't it?
No.
All bad stories in Detroit lead back to Kid Rock.
Surprisingly, no. No, I worked a lot for Kid Rock, and he's actually a very nice guy.
Okay, we had a different experience. Anyway, keep going.
But mine's on the working end. I do hear that a lot. Yeah. But I rarely stick up for douchebaggery because I think he is. But anyway, so we get in, and so Barrett is making the introductions, and this guy says to me, he's like, this is your session drummer for the day. And he's like, he wrote blah, 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 blah. And I go to shake his hand, and he doesn't shake my hand. And he says, I take my coffee black. And my husband's standing there, you know, like, because he knows I'm going to handle my business.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, why take mine with cream and sugar? I expect it in 5 minutes. So my husband's like, damn, like even he's scared now, you know? So we go in.
And then my husband went and got us both coffee.
No, I went in, started setting up my drums, and he brought in my coffee.
That's awesome.
I love that.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah, it's a daily occurrence of just dealing with like misogyny and bullshit, you know?
Yeah.
No wonder you're so funny.
No doubt, right?
It's all hiding so much anger.
Okay, well, it's time.
I'm happy with this moment.
It's time to dig into the should box.
I remember that while I'm saying it through my teeth. I'm not happy with this moment.
Well, you picked out a really big one.
I know. You guys just totally missed it when I go, it's time to dig into the should box. You should smile to be more approachable. So today should. You should smile to be more approachable.
Wow. That kind of goes back to anger. And I don't know. I hate that should. I mean, if you're not in the space to smile, but at this and, not but, and at the same time, sometimes I have a resting bitch face, which is not necessarily a good politically correct statement either. But I don't know. I just got mixed feelings on that because I'm a leader and a coach of my team. And
I hate the idea that women were put on this earth I don't know, to look a certain way for your pleasure.
Yeah. I'm here for your amusement.
Exactly. You know, I'm here for your viewing pleasure. Yeah. That's what it is.
And actually, I usually have to tell men to smile. So just to clarify that. Go ahead.
Sorry. You know, I think of it actually makes me think of Hillary Clinton and the whole and her whole run for the presidency.
Yeah.
My husband and I fought about, and he will still deny it up and down a million times over. But I really think the reason he did not like her is because she was a woman.
Yeah.
and a woman that wasn't like his mom, you know, and wasn't smiling and wasn't like he's, you know, I heard that from a lot of women. She's, you know, she's just too bitchy.
Yeah.
You know, and she's not placid.
I have a really good thing to bring up about
this. Please
do. So, firstly, I say people that say you should smile, I say you should be a nice enough person that if you see I'm not smiling, make me smile.
Exactly.
Asshole.
Ooh. Ask me why I'm not smiling.
Yeah, yeah. But that's what I mean. Like, if you have enough intuitive ability to see that I'm not smiling, do something to make me smile. Tell me I look good. Tell me I smell good. Tell me I'm smart. Tell me I'm funny, you know?
Say good morning.
Yeah. But what's interesting to me is that, so the first of my podcast that we had is we had this woman, Raylan Batdorf, on.
Yeah.
And she talked a lot about fit shaming was her thing.
Yeah.
And what was interesting to me was that men that I know and love and respect loved that podcast, but didn't like the strong woman ones.
Huh?
So not that Raylan isn't strong, but like she had some vulnerability where there, you know, like she was raw and open. And so it was just really interesting that like there was just like this wounded thing to fix. Mm. And so I find it really interesting talking about your husband and Hillary Clinton stuff. Like, it is the idea of like strong women that seem really together. And again, I'm not saying that Raylan isn't; she's an amazing human being.
Yeah.
But it was just this era of like that was raw for her, and she was very emotional during that interview, and it was very upsetting for her. And so the ones like you're just like kicking the door in, and you're like, you know, let me tell you how I feel. So it's just really interesting that the men gravitated toward, and we have another one that came out too, where it is like a more vulnerable one, and the men gravitate to those as opposed to the others.
So Sonia's talking about, she does a separate podcast outside of this one, and it is called
What Won't We Say?
Right. So, and so men actually are okay with what we won't say as long as we're saying it strongly.
No, as long as we're not saying it strongly.
Oh, yeah. Not saying
so
it
as
strongly.
Long as there's something they need to fix.
Yes. Oh, so they can come in and fix.
It's sort of that savior thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I just found it interesting. And I think that it was with women. It's like it wasn't even the thing that the women that were running for office weren't attractive enough.
Yeah.
It's just that they were just too secure.
They were too secure. Yeah.
Oh, you know? Yeah. And the, Gretchen Whitmer saying, damn roads.
Just I'm going to fix the goddamn roads.
Put Rashida Tlaib in that motherfucker. By the way, I love her for it.
Yeah.
Actually, there's the second part of this, though, that I think is really important. So you're more approachable.
Yeah. And so that's the thing that I'm in the middle of with my kid. And I have a lot of 20-year-olds working for me. My daughter's just turned 23. I hope she never listens to this. So they are really hard to talk to as an employer, as a team builder to their other teammates. It's real, and so this is that next generation of like, they don't give a shit. Yeah. They're gonna broke no bullshit, and at the same time, we still have to work as a team and get together and grow together. So this is literally my challenge of how do we be more approachable and work together, and I'm working it through because it's a whole different animal. So that's where I got to on that one. And I'm not worried about you smiling, but could you just not scowl at me?
Yeah.
Because like, what do you want? I'm doing, you know, I'm like, I'm your boss. How about that? So
I think there's something different in between, like, you know, being in the workplace and then just like these random dudes walking up to you on the street. Smile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if I take the filter off of my business.
Yeah.
somebody said, you were talking about how you got to handle yourself with these stupid guys. And as women, I walked into the liquor store to get something. I was not looking my best. And this I was just being funny. The guy goes, giving shots of this one whiskey away. And I go, with a mustache like that, that's great. I'll, you know, take your coupon.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, I get free mustache rides.
Ugh.
And I'm like, you know, you're a disgusting motherfucker is what I said and walked away.
I still remember one time. So when I first started working at United Way, it was like my first time. I mean, I guess I didn't need to say that online. But anyway, that nonprofit I used to work for, and I was working downtown. Yeah, I was working downtown, and we were in a not so great at the time neighborhood. It's now the best neighborhood, by the way, in all of Detroit. But at the
time, like, now that I'm gone, thanks.
Exactly. You know, now it's the best one. But then at the time, it was pretty scary. And I still remember walking from the parking structure to work one day, and this street guy just stopped me, and he's like, you look like you got a little black in you. And I'm like, thank you. You know, like,
not for the last 12 hours.
But I just like looked at him like, you know what? And he goes, would you like a little black in you?
I knew that's right.
Oh my God.
I really just wanted to be like
that little.
Yeah. I mean, like, has that ever in the history of the world worked?
Ever worked?
Like, here I am, 10 feet in front of work, you know, dressed in a suit, ready to go on about my day. Let me just take my pantyhose down. It was back then, yeah. I'm going to whip my pantyhose down, and we're going to do it right here in the middle of Griswold for the whole world to see. I mean, like, does that shit ever really work?
Never. It's the Jerry Seinfeld joke that he's in the TV show Seinfeld. He's like, yeah. Women are walking down the street and guys are honking. He's like, is this the best we have? Honk. And look at honk. He's like, what's your end game? What happens after you honk and get their attention? And that's exactly it. Like, what's your end game? Do you really think you're going to be like, yes, I do want a little black in me.
Exactly.
Right, like, now. You know, like,
right here, right
and
now.
In the littlest possible, little the opportunity.
So, yeah, I mean, I've who hasn't had that, oh, smile, honey. Mm. Oh, smile, honey.
Yeah.
And
unless you're 89 and from the South, don't call me honey ever.
Yeah.
I will punch you right in the nose.
Every woman has experienced that in some way, shape,
sweetie,
or form.
Honey.
Yeah.
And that's. So if I'm flipping that script, yeah. Because I just literally was having this conversation with the gals who work for me,
yeah.
And the guys who work for me. So now taking that hat off. Yeah, that's one of the most, I don't know. I have no appropriate word for that.
Are you so fragile as a human being that the way I look depends on how you approach me?
Yeah.
Are you so like, you know, like everything needs to be so comfortable and cozy for you and perfect that I have to look a certain way for you to, like,
or maybe
grow
I
a
just
set.
Don't fucking want you to approach me today.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But I'm saying, like, that shouldn't inhibit you. Grow a set and be a big boy or a big girl and don't tell me to smile. Like, approach me if you're going to approach me. Otherwise, go on your way.
Yeah.
You were not invited into my space. That's the other thing. It's like, hopefully there's a picture of us out there somewhere and you see that I am a plus size woman and I cannot
I'm
tell
shocked,
you.
Really?
I know, right? I don't
know.
Sound it.
I know, me either.
What does it even sound like? Yeah. And I can't tell you how many people throughout my life have invited themselves into my fat.
Oh, it's nice.
And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. You weren't invited into my fat. You're not.
You mean by way critiquing the way you look and giving you advice. And,
And it's like,
I think as women, people just feel. Women and men always feel that they can just comment on the way we look.
Yeah,
right?
So that's the same thing. You weren't invited into my emotional space to tell me whether I need to smile or not. You are not invited. You can step out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. Well, that's it for tonight.
Seriously? Done and done?
Done and
so
done.
So quick.
That was so quick. So we will be back next week with another should. I don't know. What do you hope the should is next time?
I can't even guess what it's going to be.
What do you want to talk about?
I don't know. I'm seeing my therapist tomorrow. So I'll have some new material.
I should have a lot of material by next week.
I will. I will have enough. Well, thanks everybody so much for listening in. And we will be back soon next week with another round from the Should Box.